Not another Apple podcast.
We start with Apple.com because we're getting almost 10 million viewers each week. What do? The first thing we're doing is we're adding a tab bar on the top of Apple.com so that we can get viewers more easily and readily to the places they like to go. Under the Apple logo will be the home page that you're very familiar with on Apple.com. But we've elevated the store to a tab right next to it, as well as QuickTime and support. These are the most highly trafficked areas of Apple.com. Support, QuickTime, and the store. All right on the top on every single page of Apple.com. But there's three new tabs in the middle. What are they? iReview, iTools, and iCards.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Not Another Apple Podcast. I'm David Grealish, and I also co-host the Retro Computing Roundtable. And I'm here with Scott Wilsey, who also co-hosts the Pocket Size Podcast. Hey, Scott. Hey, look, we're up to show 6.
It's amazing.
We're doing good.
Yep.
Moving right along now.
It's been a lot easier for me to get to show 6 than you.
Than me? There's a long time coming, show 6.
Yeah, you've had twice as many shows to get there as I have.
Well, it's coming right along, so I'm happy about that. So anyway, tonight we are going to take a look at iCloud, which is pretty topical in the here and now. And we're going to talk about what it claims to deliver, does it live up to those claims, and then we're going to look down the road to what got us to iCloud. So starting with iTools, which then evolved into .Mac. And then Mobile Me, and then of course iCloud. So first, how about anything personal you want to talk about, or what's up with you?
What's up with me? Well, my roof's getting replaced, but other than that, nothing personal. Just life is normal.
Been on another Mac podcast recently. I think you were, right?
Or
a week or two ago.
It was a couple weeks ago. Yeah, it was probably recorded like 3 weeks ago, and then it's been a couple weeks. Yeah.
Okay. Well, then for me, so of course I was telling you, pre-show and, and just by the way, everybody, so we're going to be recording every other Tuesday now, even though of course you don't get the show till like a day or so later, but so Tuesday night's better for us. So it is now Tuesday night and we almost barely got going on the show cause I had sort of a hold up, but it all worked out. But I'm really excited that I did an interview tonight with a guy named Lonnie Mims, and he is a computer collector in the Atlanta area. He lives in Roswell. He's going to be the co-sponsor of the Vintage Computer Festival Southeast. And so I did a video interview with him and took a bunch of pictures. And then I'm going to be working it into a written version, transcript interview first, and then do the video part. So, but his intent too is to obviously showcase at the Vintage Computer Festival, but then actually open a computer museum here in the area one day. So that's all very exciting.
Does he, I should ask you, I'm looking for a source for an Apple II GS monitor. You know, those were a proprietary cable and all that.
Yeah.
And I don't have one. I've got two Apple II GSs and I want to get them working, or at least one of them working, but I've got no monitor.
So. It's at least possible. He's got a ton of stuff. I mean, a couple of warehouses on his property.
Wow.
So you never know. And it might, and something like that might be something that he would be just fine to maybe sell or just give away or something. I don't know, but yeah, I will notate that. And just the last thing about Mr. Mims, Lonnie Mims, is that so one important factor or sort of the timeliness of talking to him, I've been trying to do it for a few weeks though, is that he owns not one, but two Apple Ones, which is pretty remarkable. In fact, he used to own three, Scott.
Wow.
So then he traded one for a Cray supercomputer.
Wow.
So anyway, so that's timely. So just moving along before we get into our main topic, I had two things I wanted to mention on the show. So first off is that in 3 days will be the 1 year anniversary of Steve Jobs' death. So just kind of wanted to mention that.
Isn't that amazing? It doesn't seem like it's been that long. I mean, it does if you stop and think about what Apple's been doing since then and how many people have chimed up to say this would never happen if Steve Jobs is around. But at the same time, It doesn't feel like it's been that long.
No, and you're going to see a lot. In fact, I was looking today in the news, and we do have one link in the show notes. It's actually about a very realistic waxwork sculpture that's about the debut for that anniversary. But there's, you can find, there's lots of memorial things going on online. So just do some quick searches, people, personal stories and different things. But you're seeing a lot of discussion about that and how has Apple changed and how has it stood up over the last year and just, yeah. you know, all that kind of stuff. And I think it is kind of a milestone though, that like the, you know, it's now where we'll be entering the second year without Steve Jobs, you know, at Apple anyway.
Yeah, definitely. And I hope, you know, not only is it a time to kind of reflect and think about that, and I'm sure for his family and everybody at Apple, especially so, but hopefully at some point people will quit, you know, saying that every new product that's announced was the last product that Steve Jobs had a hand in, you know, and they'll just yeah. kind of let that go.
Right. Okay. And we actually touched on this topic just a little bit more a little later on. So anyway, the other thing I wanted to mention was on the 9th of October, which is coming up in just 1 week from today, will be, and this ties in with, you know, Lonnie Mims, is that there's going to be an Apple One going on auction. So this is kind of the, I think this is going to be the third really big, prestigious auction of such a thing. This is going to be at Christie's in London. And so there was one sold there a couple of years ago for, this is all off memory now, but $200,000+. And then there's another one sold at, what's the other one? Sotheby's, yeah. not too long ago, that went for a little less, like $175,000. So it's going to be interesting to see how this one goes. This is a non-working Apple One. Lonnie has one that works and one that doesn't work. And we talk about sort of those dynamics and values and stuff in the interview, which is very interesting. So anyway, there's a link in the show notes. In this case, I just put a link directly to the Christie's auction page, which is, you can find other articles about it, but this is right to the auction, which actually hasn't, it was all in the news like at the end of August and you haven't seen a word about it again, but I guess we will as it gets closer and happens.
Yeah, now their estimate on this one is going to be somewhere between $80,600 to $128,960. I like that estimate. 960, mm-hmm. you know, it's not 129,000. But yeah. I think that's, you know, anybody who wants to sponsor this podcast so we can buy this, we've got a soldering iron. I'm sure we can get it working again. you know, just feel free.
So, yeah. So, and I guess, you know what? I guess we can revisit that. Yeah, we'll at least talk about it briefly on the next show, how much it went for.
Sure.
Start a trend. See, yeah. we have a little slight, little news segment going on now.
Auction watch.
So, Scott, why don't you start us off then? So, tell us all about iCloud.
Okay. Well, it's kind of a, as you said, this is kind of a timely topic. Right now, Apple's kind of getting beat up in the news for one of its current services, that being Maps. Mm-hmm. And people have, you know, people have for a long time said that Apple's not really a services company. They can't do web services. They can't do internet services. And they're a hardware company, which I always bristle a little bit when I hear Apple described as a hardware company, because they are a hardware company and a very good one. But the thing that keeps people coming back, you know, to Macs and iOS devices is the software. They just have excellent user experience.
And the integration of
right.
both.
Exactly.
Which is a, you know, key thing for Steve Jobs, of course.
Yeah, and that's the kind of thing that Microsoft has never been able to match. You know, none of these other people have been able to match. Android and so forth. So iCloud is one of their services that they do provide. And for me, iCloud is a, I don't know what you want to call it. It's like cutting the cord. It releases you. It gives you freedom, because with the advent of iCloud and as they've improved it, it really has set the iOS devices free from the computer. You know, you don't have to tether them and do all that stuff anymore. It's just it's a whole new experience. I think they've done a good job with iCloud. I, you know, we'll go into the history of some of the other services and the pitfalls and the stumbles that Apple's had. With iCloud so far, you know, I've been impressed with how it's come along.
You know, I use iCloud, but I have to admit, because I've been a mobile me user for quite a long time. I mean, I got started with iTools, you know, with my .Mac email address, which I still use as my primary. Well, actually, I didn't initially use it as my primary, and then it worked into that. I used AOL, which then ultimately died. You know, actually, it's not dead, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
So to be honest, I'm still a little ignorant about everything you can do with iCloud. I'm not sure. Like, what are some specifics you're using with iCloud?
Okay. Well, one thing that we do is we have, of course, we have iCloud calendars, and the nice thing is that you can share those with each other. So my wife and I each have our own iCloud calendar, and we'll enter in stuff that's upcoming for us, and that immediately goes to the other person's calendar, and they can see that. So when my wife schedules things, I can see it. When I schedule stuff, she can see it. And it basically becomes, even though we have separate iCloud accounts, it basically becomes a shared calendar experience for us to keep track of family. Here's what we need to do. Okay, got it. Can't schedule anything for this day because we have this.
But did that change from MobileMe? Is that essentially the same feature?
We never did that with MobileMe. So I don't know how easy it was to share calendars with each other with MobileMe.
See, I don't know either. It was something on our to-do list for for a lot of years.
Now, we did use Google Calendar, but I have to say that once iCloud came out and we both had iCloud accounts, I got us off the Google stuff and onto the iCloud thing. And I have to say it's a lot easier to set up and use. It's way more straightforward when you have an iOS device.
But they're compatible too, though, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
The other thing is, of course, contacts, all that stuff gets synced automatically. You know, iCloud, the things that it has are your apps, your music, your movies, all that stuff can be re-downloaded again from the cloud. It's basically your music in the cloud, apps in the cloud, iBooks in the cloud, anything that you've purchased from Apple, it's in the cloud now and you can re-download it. They call that part of iCloud, even though in my mind it's a little bit separate. But anyway, it's part of iCloud. PhotoStream, of course. I've recently started using the newly released shared PhotoStream galleries or shared PhotoStream albums, whatever they're called. Mm-hmm. And with those, what I can do is I can take pictures on my iPhone and then I can add them to an existing shared PhotoStream gallery, or I can create a new one. And then I can say, I want it to go to these people. And then I can give my dad, my wife, whoever, permission to look at these things. And then they can view them. And you also have the option of making them publicly available on the web. So it's a lot, in a way, it's a lot like what we used to have with galleries with MobileMe and .Mac, which we'll talk about.
Which I still have some, which I guess essentially got migrated. Well, no, they didn't. They got killed.
Yeah, they're probably disappeared, right?
Yeah, that's right. But I guess I was getting confused because I have, you know, I have iWeb website, so I had to actually move it over to my own domain. So it exists that way, but you know, not the same thing, obviously.
The things that work the best with iCloud though are the syncing of data. So a lot of apps that support iCloud syncing, it works out really nice because you'll be using an app on, let's say, your iPhone, and then you can go to your iPad, and if you have the same app and it supports iCloud syncing, your data is there, and everything you've done on the iPhone will be updated to match on the iPad, and the same with the Mac. You know, OS X Mountain Lion supports iCloud very well,
yeah.
And so, you know, your reminders, contact changes, anything like that, but also apps that support iCloud syncing, like the document editor that I use, you know, that stuff will just all be updated, and it's kind of a seamless experience moving from one device to the other. So I do make use of apps that use the iCloud sync as well. I do that a lot.
And like iWork?
Yeah.
Does that sync between the three? Or, you know, iOS rather, and macOS?
It does. I haven't made use of it yet because I don't have, well, let's see. I think I have older versions of the iWork stuff on the Mac. I don't use them that much.
I don't either, really, but that's something I should try for, because I'm trying to do more writing, and that would be handy because I didn't always have it on my iPad or my iPhone, of course, or on the Mac.
Right.
Instead of having to email stuff back and forth, and you know.
Now, what I use for writing is I use an app called IA Writer, and it's just one that I started using because it has good iCloud sync between iPad, iPhone, and Mac, and it's a very simple text editor, but it also makes use of Markdown, and I kind of like Markdown because what Markdown does is it lets you put in tags for how you want it formatted, but it's portable across platforms. You can generate HTML from it. You can generate PDF from it. You can generate all these different types of documents with Markdown. So I kind of got into that kind of late, but I have been using that. And so I use IA Writer, and it does use iCloud Sync. And then whenever I'm working on my iPad and I'm trying to get something done, then I can go to my Mac and continue on from where I left off. But what iCloud really does, it lets you get your iPhone away from your computer. So your music, you don't have to sync with your computer anymore. You can just download it. And if you use iTunes Match, which is kind of a peripheral service, it'll automatically say, okay, here's the music you have. It's in the cloud. Now it's going to download to this device, and it'll sync your playlists and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And so you don't have anything that you have to do. When you want to sync your when you want to back up your iOS device, iCloud can handle that. There's an iCloud backup you can use if you want to. Now, I still back it up to iTunes, which which I do over Wi-Fi. But I know a lot of people that do use the iCloud backup, and it works really well for them. So it finally becomes a device that you don't have to plug into your computer to get started with, and you don't have to plug into your computer to maintain if you don't want to. That's kind of what iCloud does for the iOS devices, in my opinion.
See, I am such a pedestrian iOS user. You don't ever want me as a guest on your Pocket Size Podcast, because I need to learn more about iCloud. I need to use a lot of these features. I do real basic stuff with my phone and an iPad and all.
It might be kind of interesting to have you come on and you'll say, here's what I do. And then we can say, well, here's what, you know, why don't you try this and then tell us how you like it and get back to it. You know, we could do that. Because the thing with me is, like, I'm the opposite of Mark Greentree. Mark Greentree sits in front of his computer all day. He works from his home and he's always at the Mac. I'm hardly ever at the Mac. I wouldn't say never, but I'm not at the Mac nearly as much as I'm somewhere in the house with my iPhone in my hand, or I'm at work or whatever, and I have my iPhone or maybe my iPad. And so if I'm going to get something done, it's going to be on an iOS device. So I heavily need to make use of any kind of capacity of iOS and systems like iCloud that set me free and allow me to get stuff done and still be part of my ecosphere of computing devices, including my Mac, when I get back to it and I want to have that data. So for me, iCloud's kind of invaluable. I'm very much mobile first and computer second.
That's why you're an expert on iOS.
Well, I don't know if I'm an expert, but I do make use of it. So iCloud, I think, has been a good service. You know, a lot of people were kind of nervous about it when it was announced at WWDC in 2011. And, you know, people had experiences with previous services that weren't necessarily so smooth. But not all the features that are currently available in iCloud now were available when iCloud was first announced, but they've kept upgrading it and adding things, and it's slowly gotten better. And the iWork portion of it that you were talking about, where you can have your iWork data sync between the Mac and iOS devices, you know, that was not initially something that worked. And that, right, you know, that drove Mark Greentree, for example, crazy. You can listen to Not Another Mac podcast, several episodes where he just rants about that. And now he's quite happy with it because they've added that. So it started off pretty good, and I think it's only improved. iCloud, I think, has been a positive experience.
And let's pause and say, hi, Mark. So Mark Greentree, our mutual friend and podcaster, does Not Another Mac podcast, as well as the geekiest show ever.
And ranter extraordinaire.
Yeah, so I'm trying to remember. I know it was announced in June at the WWDC in 2011. Mm-hmm. When did it come online? Was it right then? It didn't immediately, right?
I don't think it was, but I couldn't remember, and I couldn't find an exact date.
And there was a countdown, of course, too, when people like me lost their mobile me. I'll talk about it in the next segment. But
Even after iCloud came out, there was a grace period where you weren't going to lose all your stuff right away. That's right.
And I think it's generally, I mean, at this point, it's you know, a success. Way more pros than cons, but it's certainly, there's been some rants about it. But more so earlier on than now, right?
Yeah, I think so. I really don't hear people complaining about iCloud a lot. The only thing that I have heard, and this is why I don't really trust it yet, and I don't rely on it for myself, which, you know, maybe I'm caveman here, but I don't use the iCloud backup for my iOS devices. Like I said, I still back up to iTunes over Wi-Fi, because I have heard the occasional story of somebody uses the iCloud backup and for whatever reason they can't restore from it. And I, you know, I'm kind of scared of getting in that, where to me my backup is kind of crucial, and I'm not quite ready to take that leap of faith yet. But for everything else that iCloud offers, I'm perfectly happy. And, you know, there are people that are using the iCloud backup and seem to be doing fine with it. So
I just, every time I, you know, sync up my iPhone or my iPad, you know, I look at that and I go, you know,
I do too. Should I change it? Yeah,
because I was like, you know, I'm like, oh, you know, as far as I know, it's all good the way it is. Let's just leave it alone.
And I'm right there with you. And the thing about it is you look at that and you go, huh, it's tempting. Because when you do the iTunes sync, you have to make sure that iTunes is running on your computer. And you have to plug in your iOS device, or you can tell it, I want to do the backup now. But if you want to do the backup, you kind of have to make sure everything's in the right situation for it to happen. There's still a little bit of manual management that goes on if you're using iTunes to back up your iOS device. It's not seamless. You know, you can't just forget it never think of it, and it magically happens. With iCloud backup, you can, but then, you know, are you ready to trust it to always restore your backup or whatever? I'm not quite there yet.
So now we're gonna move on, rather move backwards through time to so we're gonna talk about Mobile Me. And you know what? Since I'm set to do this, I think I'm gonna mix it up, Scott.
Okay.
What do you think? Do you think instead of going backwards that way, maybe I should go all the way back and we work back up?
Yeah, let's do that. Let's talk about where this started.
So yeah, since I was, you know, my name's next to iTools anyway. So you're going to talk about .Mac whichever way we go.
Yeah, I'll be in the middle no matter what.
So basically where iCloud, so we'll mention iCloud, you know, but before iCloud was Mobile Me, before Mobile Me was .Mac, it was called. And then for that, the original thing was iTools. And so iTools was announced at the Macworld Expo in 2000, and Steve Jobs gave a keynote, and there's a link to a YouTube video about it. And I did watch it. Now I'm trying to remember, did he actually talk about it, or was it – yeah, I think he did, because he talks about the new different tabs up there. So you had iDisk, iCards, and iReview, and Homepage, and mm-hmm. You also had like child protection.
They did.
Do you remember
yeah.
this? Did you watch that when it came out?
No, I didn't see that when that one first came out because no, I didn't.
I remember I was not that impressed.
Well, when you look at it now and you look at the list of what they had available, it doesn't seem impressive, but then you kind of have to remember when it was happening.
Yeah. Well, I thought the iDisk was kind of cool, and that was definitely more novel in 2000. You know, and I remember trying it out. You downloaded like a little installer, and then, you know, it installed, and then your iDisk, you know, it popped up on your desktop, you know, like what we're all used to, a little hard drive thing, right? And that was like, wow, ooh, that was cool. So that part, you know, even hearing about and seeing, I thought was pretty cool. I did sign up for email, you know, got a @mac.com email address. So, you know, if you're a diehard Mac person, that was cool. The iCards I thought was, okay, sent a few of them off. The iReview, I remember at the time just thinking I just don't see people, I don't know, really using that.
What was that for? What were they reviewing for you? What kind of reviews were they providing?
Well, and you know, as far as talk about it, did they review, or was it more like a forum where people reviewed?
Oh, that's a good question.
You need to do more homework. Other things got in the way. I don't know.
Yeah, it just says a collection of reviews of popular websites. Yeah, but it doesn't really specify who those reviews came from. So maybe it was peer-to-peer reviewing. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, I watched the video a few days ago, and it's very interesting. I guess I didn't watch the whole thing. But so basically Apple introduced, you know, this new sets of services. So this was sort of the first step of Apple, providing services, you know, as part of the whole integration package of software and hardware tied together. Now they are moving into having, you know, online services, and you know, they would be free for life, your email address. I remember that part. So really that's about as much to say about it. Just, I would watch some of the video. You only need to watch a few minutes and kind of get a taste for it. So go ahead, Scott, I guess take over. So basically what happened just within 2 years is they decided to call it .Mac.
Yeah, this is kind of interesting to me because you're talking about something that came out in 2000, which was iTools, and it had these services that you've just described. And then in 2002, they rename it .Mac, and they did this at Macworld Expo in July of 2002.
So what, 2.5 years later?
Yeah, not very much longer. And then, so what they did is they upgraded the homepage or the personal web hosting service. They upgraded iDisk, and apparently they improved the .Mac email so that it had both POP and IMAP. Because from what I'm reading here, I'm not familiar with iTools, but it looks to me like it only supported IMAP, not POP, which is interesting to me because more people were using POP than IMAP at that time, to my mind.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think so.
So anyway, they also included a backup service, which I never used. Of course, I had that. I had that because I had a .Mac account at one point, and I had that backup, but I never really used it.
Didn't either. And because I'm not sure. When did you get on like fast internet, cable and such?
Well, I got on fast internet in 2000, but I didn't. I was on PCs at that point in time.
I guess it was. So I had this at the time, but we were still on dial-up, you know, when that transition happened.
Yeah. No, I hadn't come back to the Mac yet. I had wandered into the PC world and was in the desert suffering until I came back to the Mac. So, you know, those are the things that they did. So if you think about the list of services there, it's not all that impressive. Email, some web hosting, iDisk, greeting card.
Oh, and Virex. Don't forget that, which, you know, you really needed for your Mac.
Oh, yeah. Terrible. I'm amazed Macs function at all without that.
But so, there was one other key feature you might have missed there that they included. They charged you for it.
They did?
Yeah, that was the biggest thing, was that they, you know, as tons of people came to iTools, you know, but 2.5 years later, all of a sudden, I guess it was costing them tons of money.
Oh, that's right.
So then you had to start buying .Mac. This
is also part of why,
and I think you only had so much time to migrate your email over.
Mm-hmm.
And if I remember correctly, like I said, it wasn't my primary one anyway. And I was like, you know, heck with that. I already pay AOL, you know, so, but I was able to get it later on when we started, you know, getting .Mac. So,
yeah,
but yeah, so you had to start buying it.
Right, because they came out with that in July, and by September, people had to migrate their accounts over, transition them to .Mac, and at that point in time, you had to pay. And I don't know what it was at that time, but if I remember right, .Mac accounts were like $99 a year or something like that, $100 a year, basically. And I'll admit, you know, I had a .Mac account at one time when I came back to the Mac, and I'll admit, looking at it and thinking, it's a little bit overpriced, but I went ahead and did it anyway because it seemed like there were some, you know, iDisk seemed like a good idea. I kind of wanted a .Mac email. And at the time, now there's a whole bunch of online services that you kind of get into because they're very good and you wind up paying a yearly fee. At that point, that was pretty much the only one. Now I have others and I wouldn't want to pay $99 a year for it.
Yeah.
But at the time, it seemed fine. So yeah. So that was .Mac.
I'm not sure when, so I subscribed to .Mac and I'm trying to think, I'm guessing, 2006 or seven, and my daughter yelling in the background.
She's a .Mac fan. She's all excited about that.
But this is, you know, 2006, late 2006, or whatever, when I started playing around with podcasting, and then when I really got started, and then more so in 2007, and obviously going forward. But for me, the whole miracle of .Mac and having a Mac and having I'm going blank with my names here. I want to say iTools. Yeah, iWeb, but what's the suite called on your Mac? iLife.
Oh, iLife, sure. Yeah. Whew. Yeah.
So, you know, if it wasn't for .Mac, I would have never, well, I can't say that, but it made it easy for me to become a podcaster. So from GarageBand and iWeb and iMovie and stuff on the Mac itself, and then .Mac, with doing all the hosting and all the posting the MP3 and RSS and all that, which I still don't know hardly anything about, that really made the difference for me to get started in podcasting. So it was well worth the investment for me.
And there were a lot of people who liked and really made use of that web hosting that integrated with iWeb, which they would create the websites with. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, when that went away, when it became iCloud, that was upsetting. And also, just that whole capacity. And then the thing about .Mac that really intrigues me, though, is we were talking about the dates. So 2002, here it comes. Well, .Mac lasted until, 2008.
5 years.
Yeah, 2008. So in 2007, they were still introducing features. In 2007, they came out with the web gallery feature, which is, okay, upload your photos and display them as a web gallery. And I remember my brother had the original iPhone, I think it was, and I thought it was so cool that he was able to easily upload pictures to his .Mac web gallery. Well, of course, now with iCloud, we just know it's in PhotoStream, it's anywhere you want it to be. But at the time, it was kind of mind-blowing how simple it was for him to do from his first-generation iPhone. So, I mean, for that long, .Mac existed, and they were rolling out features, and yet it didn't change a whole lot. It just kind of shows you that Apple wasn't really pushing the boundaries in that period of time, but they had a service that people still wanted to use.
Why did they, you know, I'm trying to remember now, what was the justification that they wanted? Why did they change it to Mobile Me? I guess it had something to do with the iPhone, right? with iOS, and then people, obviously tons of people not on Macs.
Yeah, I think that was
iOS
it.
Users.
You're right.
Yeah.
So as 2008 comes along, they're bringing out the App Store, and they're bringing out third-party iOS apps, and people are becoming more and more mobile. And you're right. It's exactly the case where now they have some of the iLife stuff on and the iWork stuff on the iPhone, you know, similar apps. And yeah, it's more of a mobile thing. So now it's kind of like heading down that path towards, okay, all your data's mobile. You are going to use a Mac, but you're also going to use your iPhone. And I think that probably was it. I honestly don't know what the rationale behind it was, other than it seems like it's logical and it makes sense that they kind of needed to not call it .Mac, which is so Mac-centric. And they know that that's kind of what they're heading away from in terms of the sheer volume of devices that are going to be sold are not going to be Macs. They're going to be mobile.
I'm pretty certain that was it, because figure, look at the time frame. We're talking not quite a year after people actually had iPhones in hands, which was, you know, a dramatic revolution of, you know, usage 10, 11 months.
Oh, yeah.
People using, and also, when did the, I guess, was the iPhone 3, 3G, I guess, was the second one? That came out around that time, too, didn't it?
Yes, 3G would have been, 3G would have been a year later. So yeah, it would have been, I believe it would have been in June of, I believe it was probably, it was either in Macworld if they were still there, or WWDC that year. So it would have been in that time frame, sure. It was definitely that year.
So I guess we're clearly, continuing on, you know, so we're clearly into the mobile me area. So the transition to mobile me, so I'm looking at the Wikipedia article, which we have links to. So it was announced on June, WWDC, and so mobile me replaced .Mac, and .Mac.com was taken offline from 8 to 12 that day on July 9th, actually. Sorry, it was launched. And then the mobile me service went live between 8 p.m. and 2 a.m. Pacific time. I'm trying to – this anyway. Anyway, there was a big problem that happened.
There was a big problem, and there was a lot of angry people. And one of the reons why services and Apple don't mix sticks in people's memories is because of this event.
Mm-hmm. So there are tons of reports of people not being able to access any of the mail functions of mobile me.
Syncing.
And and all kinds of syncing problems. And then free trials charged to people. And
that would really get under your skin, wouldn't it? If you're trying to do a free trial of something and then you're getting charged.
Yeah. So this then brings forth, you know, the famous story, which I think we link over to, about Steve Jobs, calling all the team in and basically firing the person in charge of mobile me in front of the entire team. And I think using some harsh language, too.
Yeah, at least the guy didn't have to commit seppuku, but he did lose his job.
He also used the F word, according to the article here. Angered by the poor review the product got from the Wall Street Journal's Walt Mossberg.
I'm pretty sure a lot of people at Apple were using the F word in that period of time. Yeah, it was kind of plagued with problems. And they, if you remember, that was when they rolled out a whole bunch of stuff at once. Mm-hmm. I think they did a Mac OS upgrade at the time. I think they did an iOS upgrade. They did an iTunes upgrade. And they did the Mobile Me rollout. It was something like that. Yeah. It was some massive tsunami of stuff coming out of Apple all at once, and it just kind of blew up on them. And it was not, you know, it wasn't their finest moment, and it was kind of embarrassing.
You know what's, I guess, I don't know if you call it ironic or not, but, you know, so I was a Mobile Me subscriber, you know, I paid money for it. And I did, you know, just as an aside, I learned a good trick, though, was when I would ever buy my renewals, I always bought them off Amazon. Now, obviously, it doesn't matter anymore, but you could save like 25-30% by buying it from Amazon. You know, you had to physically have the box sent to you and then you renewed.
Yeah.
Versus doing it straight from Apple or whatever. But, you know, I did all my website, podcasting, hosting, all that stuff through Mobile Me. And then my email was all through Mobile Me during that, these problems that time. From my perspective, never had a problem.
Now, what about iDisk?
My email could have gone down maybe during that time frame, and I didn't know it. Sure. I didn't have an iPhone then, or I didn't even have a – yeah, so I wasn't getting my email through a smartphone. But what about iDisk?
Yeah, how was iDisk for you during that period of time? Because I always found, especially once Dropbox came along, I kind of abandoned iDisk because I always kind of found it slow, very slow.
I didn't really use it from like in the sense of in that way, like with Dropbox way. So I think technically my podcasts and all that stuff were hosted on it. So I was using it essentially, but I wasn't directly using it. So again, as far as I know, there was never any problem with you know, my podcasts being hosted or any of that kind of stuff then. Because I, you know, 2008, middle 2008, I didn't have a lot going on.
Mm-hmm. So
I had only really started, done a few things and, you know.
Even though I had poked around with iDisk, I'd never used iWeb and created a web website. So did...
I'm still using it.
Oh, really?
I was using it today.
So did that actually
it's
use...
It's terrible. I need to get rid of it. I need to learn, you know, I need to migrate to something else, but it's just, you know, I don't have time yet.
Yeah, I know. It's learning. So did that, when you created a website and uploaded files and stuff, it used your iDisk space to store that stuff?
Yeah, I'm pretty certain it did. I'm trying to remember because I could, you know, I could, yeah, because I could mount my iDisk on the desktop and basically any of my files from my MobileMe account were on that.
Okay.
So any hosting, everything that went on was on that.
Okay. That makes sense.
It was
sense.
On my iDisk. Yeah. So I could actually physically go in there and look at it and, you know, and it was a sort of a weird methodology or, you know, organizing structure the way it did it. It wasn't the most logical looking, but I didn't need to worry about that. It just let it do its magic in the background. Right. And then I can just do the creative stuff. So from that standpoint, it, you know, it allowed me to be creative on the front side and not worry. I'm not real strong when it comes to some of that back of the house management stuff.
Well, you know,
I'm still not.
There was a lot of people. I mean, I remember specifically Gazmaz on the MyMac podcast. Gaz was talking about when MobileMe was coming to an end and having to find a substitute for that web space. It was just so easy and convenient. You didn't have to think about it.
Yeah.
Then you had to go find a web host and you had to review all these web hosts. Who's going to be good? Who's going to make it easy? What tools am I going to use? What software do they have? Who can I trust? How much is it going to cost? Blah, blah, blah. And those are just things that you didn't have to think about with MobileMe. So for a lot of people who didn't want to think about that stuff and they didn't have to, that was a big feature of MobileMe. A lot of people liked that. And they liked the web galleries as well for the same reasons. I don't have to upload stuff to Flickr and make it hard to use. No, I just give people a URL. Here's my stuff. And oh, by the way, I can instantaneously upload it all from my Mac or my right. iPhone. And it's easy. You know, those were things that people liked and used. So yeah, there's a reason why those were two very popular features, I think.
And luckily for me is the whole migration thing, because I was intimidated and worried about it. So my podcast went dark for, I think it was a week or so, because I put it off and never did it. I think it was June 30th, I think was the cutoff date. I'm not going to look it up, but in any case, something like that. So it was recent this year, but for me, it turned out to be easy because I already was splitting between my own domain, classiccomputing.com, which I had been paying for and hosting since 1998 and not doing so much with it back then. But and then what I used MobileMe for was purely for the podcasting stuff. So I had my web page, and then when you went to the links for podcasts and stuff, I just have sort of like the landing page about the different podcasts, and then you jump over to the MobileMe hosted stuff.
Sure.
So all I had to do was, once I figured this out, and again, it was surprisingly easy, is I was able to go into iWeb and essentially just point it over to my my domain and then publish it. And,
okay.
But then it broke all my my iTunes, iTunes
sure,
listings.
Because yeah. Your RSS feed would change, yeah.
Yeah, and so I won't get started on this rant, but, you know, thank you, Apple, for iTunes and for all the great stuff you do. But if you're going to have any form of customer service, like with iTunes and the reviews and all that, I wish they had some real customer service, because basically what happened is I say, hey, yeah, my links are broken or whatever. Could you redirect? And they just freaking delete everything.
Yeah, well,
that's their solution. I had to just resubmit on my podcast, so I lost all the reviews
and all everything. The listeners. I'm sure a lot of people got lost not knowing what happened. So you know, I know how that goes, because remember when Pocket Size Podcast was unceremoniously dumped out of the iTunes store.
Oh, yeah. I remember you talking about that.
Yeah. And they never could. You know, I actually got a hold of people through their support.
That's when I first became aware of you.
Yeah. And I got a hold of people. Well, maybe people found out about me because I lost my podcast. Maybe I was more popular. Anyway, they dumped me and they couldn't tell me why. I did get a hold of customer service, but nobody was ever able to give me an explanation as to why. And I was telling him, look, there has to be some kind of process that says here, you know, any system that allows you to delete something should provide a mechanism for what led to that decision. There has to be a tree, right?
Yeah.
If this, then that. Oh, this doesn't meet that, so therefore it has to go. There has to be some kind of reason behind it. And I thought, it must have been a glitch because nobody could ever give me a reason. But yeah, I'm right there with you. If you're a podcaster and you have to make any changes or they make them for you, you're kind of at their mercy and it's not a pretty thing.
Well, and again, I don't know a lot about this firsthand, but it seems to me, like in my case particularly, is you can't just have some real basic little form and I simply go, hey, by the way, can you change my RSS feed to this now and just submit it and they change it for me? I don't understand that.
What they want you to do is they want you to be hands-off and they want you to
redirect and all this other stuff, which you can't do. I couldn't do through Mobile Me.
Right. You can't do through Mobile Me. Exactly. So yeah, it's kind of a...
But you know what also stunk about Mobile Me is I never could get numbers. They wouldn't provide you that either. Like how many downloads you'd have for your podcast or that kind of stuff. Yeah. Which again, why wouldn't you just do that? I would have paid them a little something if they could have done some of that.
Yeah, I think... I don't think they were, you know, a lot of people did use it for hosting podcast files. There's no doubt about it. I know of several podcasters right off the top of my head who did that in addition to yourself. Mm-hmm. I get the impression they never really meant it to be used quite that way, you know? So normally, especially at that point in time, for podcasters to have a hosting service that would provide really good stats and would provide good caching and uptime for files and stuff like that. And also, every time you upload a podcast, you're just increasing your bandwidth usage. You're never going to remove a podcast, right? So I just have the feeling Apple just wasn't interested in playing that game. But people used it that way, and it worked for them.
I guess the sort of last thing I'll mention is, you know, I used to work for Apple. Did you know that?
You worked for Apple?
Yeah, a couple of times.
Wow.
So I was what was called an Apple Solutions Consultant. Do you know what that is? That was one of those guys that worked in the CompUSA.
Oh, okay.
So I was an Apple rep in a CompUSA in Norfolk, Virginia in the fall of 2004 through about the summer of 2005.
Wow.
Actually, that's when I got started really with .Mac because as an Apple employee, they gave it to you. Here you go. Have a year of .Mac. So actually I think I won a year or something. Like my first couple of years, I didn't have to pay anything. I got it free. So that obviously was a bonus and helped out a lot. But then I went on to work. Where I'm going with this is it was, man, Mobile Me or .Mac subscription, it was pushed like crazy in retail from Apple.
So, I remember they used to do that whenever you would buy a device.
Oh, my God. You were rated on like, you know, how many Apple Cares you sold and, you know, how many Mobile Me's you attached. That was the attachment rate.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in retail, you know what that means.
Yeah.
I also worked a Christmas in Jacksonville, Florida, the Apple store. Geez, what year was that? I don't know, 2007 or something. And then I worked. Then when I moved to the Atlanta area and I was looking for a job, I got a part-time work at the Apple store here in my area. So I worked Christmas here. But like I said, the whole .Mac mobile thing was just like, you know, push, push, push.
Hmm.
So Apple is really pushing this all the time, you know, about, you know, sell it. Look, oh, it's wonderful. It's the greatest thing in the world. And then finally, I kind of climbed on board. Yeah, it is pretty great for what I use it for. But I guess the reason I brought this up because then they just kill it off.
Well, they killed it off.
With the iCloud. Oh, no, we really don't want you to use it that much.
They got rid of some of the services. So obviously they were rethinking, hey, we got to have some online services, but how do we want them to be used? What are people going to use? What do we want to provide? Definitely rethinking there. But they clearly had to provide a back end for this data to be synchronized everywhere and for some of these other things to happen. And they know that if people are going to be mobile, how are your photos going to be taken care of? I believe that people who don't have computers but have devices are an increasing number of human beings roaming around the planet. And, you know, I would love for example, my mom would be a prime candidate of somebody that I would love to take a computer away from and give her an iPad. And I think it would be great. And
now that they, say that.
Yeah, I know. I say it too much. Good thing my mom never listens to podcasts. But, you know, it's just true. And it's just easier. And now that they have services like iCloud, they can do that. But it makes sense that they had to go free with it because these are not... I mean, they are value add. These are things that definitely enhance your use of your iOS devices and your Mac, no question.
But yeah, Google is here, though.
But Google is here, and you kind of take these things for granted. Of course, I have a mobile device. Of course, my data has to sync. I mean, it's so obvious that you can't really charge for that because it kind of has to be a feature of a mobile device. It really does. So I think that's why they went this way. And because of that, that's probably why they got rid of the web hosting and a couple of the other things, is because you're not paying for it anymore. And so they don't want it to be used that way. It's definitely a different mindset. It definitely did evolve. For what they're providing, I think they really did do a good job with iCloud.
You know, I really have been so, you know, sort of related, because obviously, again, I was a mobile me, you know, user with a, I keep wanting to say iTools. I've got iTools stuck in my head now. iLife. But yeah, I was really disappointed that, you know, that Apple hasn't, you know, I don't understand why they couldn't go ahead and just keep iWeb up. I mean, I guess I can understand. I don't know. I just wish they'd, maybe they could have updated it one last time.
Yeah, I don't know.
Give me some better migration. I really got to get out of it. I mean, it's not terrible by any means. It works, you know. Like, so go look at my website, and that's what it's using. But it's highly limited.
Yeah.
See, I know WordPress is not hard. It's just different, and I'm not used to doing it that way. And I just don't have, you know, the thing is, I have to really focus myself to try to be creative and writing and the podcasting and other stuff. And I just, it's hard for me to get myself into the nuts and bolts of the stuff.
Well, and isn't that the entire promise of the Mac and now the iOS devices anyway, is that it lets you do what you want to do and it gets out of the way and you don't have to spend years and months and days fiddling with stupid things that you don't even care about to get your work done. You want to do the stuff that you do care about. That's the whole promise of it. So yeah, you're not wrong to want something that functions that way for doing this particular job either.
Yep. Okay. Well, that's it.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, here's the last question. So I'm asking you, Scott, because I think you know more about it than me.
Oh, no.
So real quick, as we wrap up, how do you compare then, what services would you say are better that Google or maybe even someone else offers than iCloud?
That's a good one.
If there are any, I mean.
Well, you know, I mean, for a long time I used Gmail, and I still do use Gmail. I will say that. All my accounts, even if they're personal domains or they're custom domains, they go through Gmail. So for email...
I need you to help me after this show.
Okay.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but actually my David at Classic Computing, it's still POP-based.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you don't want that.
And I know that I can somehow run it through Gmail. And anyway, so mm-hmm. go ahead. So Gmail.
Yeah. So I do think Gmail is probably better than what you get with iCloud and previously MobileMe for certain types of things. On the other hand, Google is known to be an advertising company, and Apple, for all the bad rap it gets from the people that don't like it, I do believe that Apple is more concerned with user privacy, and I think that was part of the Maps debacle, is Google wanted more of that information. Hey, where are these people? And ads. And Apple didn't want to do that. I believe that. So I think that, you know, it's a trade-off. Yeah, I have all my mail and Gmail. Do I ever think about moving it away? Of course I do. Have I found something that works comparably that I'm going to move it to? No, I have not. So there's that. Calendars, you know, that works pretty well. It's easy to subscribe to other calendars in Google Calendar, you know.
They're about the same, aren't they?
They really are. I think with iCloud, I think it's finally to the point where, you know, like I said, I moved most of our stuff off the Google services like calendars and stuff like that. I never did use Google Contacts. I always used the built-in contacts that would sync with MobileMe because they did a decent job of that, and that continued with iCloud. But Google Tasks or whatever it's called, never used it, and now that Reminders syncs across iCloud, that works for me. So I do prefer to keep my stuff away from Google, and honestly, for myself right now, I can't think of one single thing other than the email that Google does better. Obviously, right now, somebody's jumping up and down and screaming, the map data. But you know what I'm saying. As far as personal services go, can't really think of anything that I would rather use than what Apple's providing with iCloud right now.
Well, that's really too bad, because I was going to pitch that we could do not another Google podcast, you know, every other week, like we alternate, you know?
Well, first, for my marriage sake, you'd have to find somebody else. But also... I wouldn't be able to wax enthusiastic about Google. I have serious reservations about them as a company, and there's many reasons why. I try not to be one of these people that's, you know, so pro Apple that I'm blind to their faults and so negative Google that I'm blind to their faults. But Google, I personally believe, has some ethical issues going on. So anyway, yeah, I'm if I could get away from Google Mail right now and find a completely equivalent alternative that would do the things I want to do and yet not be Google, I would be there.
I really want to, I think I'm going to break down and get iWork for iOS. And because as you know, I like Google Docs, so nothing against it, but I wouldn't mind trying competition there too.
Mm-hmm.
But over on the RCR, we're pretty Google-fied, using YouTube and Google Groups or Google Plus groups. I don't even know. So, I let Earl and Carrington, they're more the gearheads, that kind of stuff.
Now, actually, the one thing I will say that Google does do better than iCloud is if you want to share documents with somebody else. I don't really know of a good way to do that with iCloud, how to share documents with another person. Your calendar data, you can do that. You know, and iCloud is very good at sharing your document data with yourself. Oh, I've got it here, I've got it there, I've got it everywhere, but how do I share it with David? I don't know of a way to do that. So you and I use Google Docs, we use Dropbox, sometimes we use Evernote. I mean, there's other solutions, but iCloud's not a part of how we share stuff with each other, and I don't know how to make it do that. So sure, you might get iWork, and it might work extremely well for you to use iWork on your Mac, iWork on your iPhone, iWork on your iPad, and you can sync all this stuff, but you could never share it with me, and you know, you'd have to call me up and read it off to me, and that just doesn't work very well.
Yeah, and Google Docs has been, you know, I found out about them, you know, I first started doing the Retro Computing Roundtable because that was the first one I had other people on. I needed something like that where everybody could look at the same thing. So it was great. Yeah, it had been around and I'd heard about it. I was like, why would I ever need that, you know, online document thing? I'm about to use it again too for the VCF SE for making the forms, online forms for like the exhibitors to fill out and the presenters and everything. So it's pretty cool for all that stuff.
Yeah, and I think that's a hole that Apple has, is Apple is big on sharing photos, they're big on sharing calendar data, blah blah blah, but they need to stop and go, hey, what do people do with each other? They share documents, don't they? I mean, it's 2012, seems obvious by now that people collaborate on stuff, and that's to me the one big hole in iCloud that I would like to see fixed so that I could move away from Google Docs forever. And, you know, whatever. Anyway, I won't rant.
And then go broke. And finally go broke.
Don't know if that'll happen. But anyway. Yeah, so iCloud, to me, huge success. Really, as it's improved over the last couple of years or year, over the last year, I should say, it's just gotten better and better. And I think you'll find other people that would say the same thing who were kind of grumpy about certain things not being included in the feature set before. And now, pretty happy with it. Reliability-wise, pretty happy. Feature-wise, pretty happy. And the fact that it really makes the mobile devices come to life in a way that Android was ahead of iOS in terms of being tether-free and being its own unique device and not having to be the little baby, you know, baby cow, you know, going over to the mama cow for milk every morning. Now it's kind of a grown-up cow and it's on its own. And that is something that iOS devices finally have now thanks to iCloud. So I'm happy.
Yeah, me too. So you know what? It looks like we stuck to our personal goal of about an hour, even though we're over.
Well, yeah.
Normal plan is supposed to be like a 45-minute show. But you know what? We did just about an hour. I think that's pretty good. So
I'll edit out everything of my talking and then
we'll... Yeah. And so let's wrap it up.
Okay.
So our next show is 2 weeks from today as far as when we're recording. So we're recording again on October the 16th. Please help us by spreading the word about the show in forums and tweet about it. And by all means, please leave us a review on iTunes. That would really help. You can go to notanotherapplepodcast.com for to discuss links and the show notes. Email and or send audio feedback to the show at feedback@notanotherapplepodcast.com. Scott, I'm embarrassed to say we have not gotten one email.
Really?
But, you know, we're just getting rolling, so I know it kind of needs to build up. So please... I'm asking everybody who's listening, just drop us a quick email. Just say, hi, I listened, something like that.
If you don't, you know what's going to happen. David and I are going to be forced to create fake
phone.
Emails and send it to feedback@notanotherapplepodcast.com. And then it's going to become a big scandal. And yeah, it's just going to be horrible.
So. We just won't record him. We'll just talk on the phone.
And yeah. We'll be known as those guys who faked their own emails.
So. You can follow Scott on Twitter at ScottTaw. So that's ScottTaw. And you can follow myself with at Classic Computin. So that's everything but the last G, Classic Computin. And that's because that was that's the cutoff point for the length. Doesn't that stink?
Oh, okay.
They made it one letter longer.
I wondered about that.
So thanks for listening, everyone. And see you next time. Bye, Scott.
Adios.